KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 9:03, it's sunny and 73 degrees in Atlantic. We look for sunny skies today with a high of 88. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. In area news, police in Lenox report a 14-year-old male has been charged with second-degree sexual abuse following an investigation into an incident which allegedly occurred on or about August 11th. Officials say they received a call on that date with regard to the alleged sexual abuse of a 9-year-old boy. The reporting party intervened in the alleged sex act. Following an investigation and consultation with juvenile authorities, Lenox police charged the 14-year-old, and his case has been referred to juvenile court. The name of the suspect is not being released due to his age. Pottawatomie County Attorney Matt Wilbur said this morning that no charges will be filed in connection with an April 13, 2011 shooting death in Council Bluffs. On Tuesday, a Pott County grand jury considered charges against Robert Keith Hashberger with regard to the shooting death of John Anthony Rodarte. The jury returned a no bill, which means they have declined to file charges. The no bill was filed with the clerk of court this morning and concludes the Pott County Attorney's Office involvement in the case. Rodarte was shot and killed by Hashberger following a verbal altercation at the Dew Rock Inn in Council Bluffs. Hashberger, who claimed he was acting in self-defense, was initially charged with first-degree murder. An investigation and deposition of witnesses, however, resulted in the Pott County Attorney's Office dismissing the charge, which was then taken under consideration by the grand jury. Because the grand jury proceedings are secret, Wilbur said he could not comment further on the evidence they considered Tuesday. A scholarship will be created to honor the memory of a stunt pilot whose plane crashed during the Kansas City Air Show last weekend. 50-year-old Brian Jensen of Ponte Vedra, Florida, formerly of Atlantic, was performing loops and spirals Saturday afternoon when his biplane failed to pull out of a dive. The plane crashed in flames on grass next to the runway at the Wheeler Downtown Airport in Kansas City. Air Show officials announced Monday that a scholarship in Jensen's honor will be established through the Mid-American Youth Aviation Association. Jensen, an Iowa native, went on to fly commercial jetliners after he graduated from Atlantic. The National Transportation Safety Board and Federal Aviation Administration are investigating Saturday's crash. Four people, two adults and two teens, were injured, one of them critically, during a two-vehicle accident Monday afternoon in Shelby County. Sheriff's officials said Tuesday the driver of one of the vehicles, 50-year-old Scott Schultz, and his passengers, 16-year-old Olivia Schultz and 17-year-old Rhett Schultz, all from Hampton, Nebraska, were hurt in the crash. All three were transported to Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. Olivia Schultz was later transferred by helicopter to Creighton Hospital in Omaha. The driver of the other vehicle, 70-year-old Carol Shimorowski of Erling, was also hurt and treated for her injuries at the hospital in Harlan. Authorities say Scott Schultz's 2008 Saturn was traveling south on Highway 59 at around 3:30 p.m. Monday when a northbound 2007 Ford Taurus, driven by Shimorowski, attempted to turn left onto Highway 37. The resulting collision totaled both vehicles. That accident remains under investigation. A crash between two vehicles Monday evening in Atlantic resulted in two people being sent to the hospital. Atlantic police said yesterday the driver of one of the vehicles, Thomas Sanbothy of Griswold, and an unidentified passenger in his vehicle were injured and transported to the Cass County Hospital. The accident happened at the intersection of Highway 71 and 14th Street at around 6:50 p.m. Monday. Officials say a vehicle driven by Brandon Cook of Bridgewater was eastbound on 14th Street as Sanbothy was traveling south on Highway 71. Cook told police he thought Sanbothy was going to turn right onto 14th Street and proceeded into the intersection where the vehicles collided. Cook was cited for failure to obey a stop or yield sign. Damage from the crash amounted to $10,650. Monday morning's storm that dumped 4 to 7 inches of rain across western Iowa is causing more troubles for residents in Council Bluffs. Public Information Officer Don Gross said Tuesday that several homes were currently unlivable due to collapsed basements.
As of today, 7 homes that have had basement collapses that have been severe enough that they've had to evacuate their homes.
All of the affected homes are on the west side of Council Bluffs, which was hit the hardest by flash flooding. The city is also dealing with a collapsed sanitary sewer, which could take up to 2 weeks to repair. There was some good news, though, and that is that most of the streets that were closed by flooding are now back open.
There are a few spots that still have a little bit of water on them, but most water's receded.
And Iowa Senator Tom Harkin toured the flood-stricken area of Council Bluffs on Tuesday. The Council Bluffs Recycling Center said they were accepting tree debris free of charge to city residents until further notice. While the water levels on the flooded Missouri River are dropping, officials want safety awareness to remain high. This week's rain prompted flash flooding in southwest Iowa, which, as we mentioned, led to building collapses, evacuations, and even some daring rescues of trapped residents in the Council Bluffs area. Brigadier General John McMahon of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said the public can't let its guard down.
I would caution everybody that, you know, we have to be very vigilant, continue to be very vigilant, insofar as the risks associated with this flooding, because the water is still high, it's moving fast, and there's erosion and other effects, and we got to be vigilant in terms of how the levees, both the temporary and the permanent ones, are performing. And so we're not out of the woods yet.
Releases of water from upriver reservoirs like Gavin's Point Dam near Yankton, South Dakota, are being cut back daily. That process started last Friday and will continue through the end of the month. Still, South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard warns that significant danger lurks as the release levels drop. He says the next week or two will be crucial.
If there is going to be a catastrophic failure of any levee, it probably could occur during that time. So we want to urge our citizens not to become complacent, which is easy to do because they see, oh, the end is in sight, the light is at the end of the tunnel.
Dugard says residents in all states along the Missouri River need to remain at the ready for potential risks.
We really have to be careful as the subjacent weight of the water draws away, the supersaturated soils that make up those levees could slump. And so it's very important that we have vigilance on those levees during this next 10-day period and not allow our citizens to become complacent.
Iowa's Governor Branstad met in Omaha last week with his counterparts from half a dozen other Missouri River states to discuss avenues to prevent a repeat of summer-long flooding. While the water has been high for more than 2 months already, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon says it could be October before the flooded waterway returns to normal.
When you have a system this charged, I think it's important for public to know out there that they always need to be careful. I mean, we've lost a National Guardsman coming back from duty. We've lost a trooper that we're still searching for. It's a very dangerous river. Everybody out there should be well aware of the danger of the power of this much water moving this quickly and know this is not over, not until it gets back inside its banks, and it's a long way from getting there.
Releases from Gavin's Point topped out at 160,000 cubic feet per second, or around 1 million gallons per second. By the month's end, the releases should be down to 90,000 CFS. Those reductions will halt on September 1st, allowing the Corps to inspect the system's levees and dams. And seed maker Syngenta has filed a lawsuit against grain elevator operator Bunge North America over its ban of a variety of Syngenta's biotech corn. The lawsuit was filed last week in federal court in Sioux City. Bunge, which operates grain elevators in North America, including one in Council Bluffs, recently posted notice it would not accept corn planted with Syngenta's AgriSure Viptera seed. Bunge said the seed has not been approved for export to China. Minnesota-based Syngenta claims Bunge violated federal and state laws and that the seed has been approved for shipment to other international markets. Bunge said the lawsuit could put a major export market at risk until China approves the seed, and Bunge will stand by its decision until that happens. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission says inspectors have found no major damage at the 12 nuclear power plant sites that were not shut down following yesterday's East Coast earthquake. The unusual event status has been canceled at the sites in the area that spans from North Carolina to Michigan. The twin reactors at the Virginia facility near the epicenter remain shut down, though. Evacuations have begun on Ocracoke, the tiny barrier island off of North Carolina. Hurricane Irene has strengthened to a major Category 3 storm, and the National Hurricane Center in Miami says the storm is over the Bahamas, with Irene's maximum sustained winds increasing to near 115 miles per hour. It's expected to strengthen as it approaches the east coast on a bearing toward North Carolina. Pro-Gaddafi snipers have cut off the road to Tripoli's airport today. They've also been firing at motorists near the Libyan capital's port and launched repeated attacks on Gaddafi's sprawling government compound. Rebels captured the compound yesterday but found no sign of Gaddafi. He has vowed not to surrender. The Congressional Budget Office says the budget deficit will hit $1.28 trillion this year. That's down slightly from the previous 2 years, though. The CBO also projects that the deficit reduction package passed by Congress earlier this month will reduce budget deficits by a total of $3.3 trillion over the next decade. And the government is reporting a 4% increase in durable goods orders last month. The increase was driven by a big jump in aircraft orders, as well as auto and auto parts. Orders in all other major categories dropped, including computers, electronic goods, and machinery. On Wall Street today, the stocks opened lower, but they're on a rebound now. The Dow is currently up nearly 100 points. S&P 500 is up about 12, and the NASDAQ is up nearly 22 points. Taking a look at our funeral announcements this morning, 84-year-old Claire Schuler Jr. of Atlantic died August 16th. A committal service for Claire Schuler Jr. will be today at 10:30 in the Atlantic Cemetery. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has the arrangements. 69-year-old Joanne Hulsebus of Atlantic died Saturday. Funeral services for Joanne Hulsebus will be held today at 10:30 at the Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. 90-year-old Catherine Earlmeyer of Manning died Sunday. A massive Christian burial service for Catherine Earlmeyer will be held today at 10:30 at the Sacred Heart Church in Manning. Odie Funeral Home in Manning has the arrangements. 67-year-old Darwin Andy Anderson of Greenfield died Saturday. Funeral services for Darwin Anderson will be this afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Steen Funeral Home in Messina. 93-year-old Roberta Gray of Oakland died Sunday. Funeral services for Roberta Gray will be tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the Oakland Christian Church. Reconvened Funeral Home in Oakland has arrangements. 50-year-old Brian Donald Jensen of Ponte Vedra, Florida, and formerly of Atlantic, died Saturday. Memorial services for Brian Jensen will be tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Cass County Community Center here in Atlantic. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home of Atlantic has arrangements. 68-year-old Bill Clarence Libby of Lewis died Monday. Funeral services for Bill Libby will be on Friday at 10:30 at Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. 91-year-old Isla Mueller of Adair died Monday. Funeral services for Isla Mueller will be Friday at 10:30 at St. John's Lutheran Church in Adair. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home of Adair has arrangements. 85-year-old Margaret Helen Brewer of Stewart and formerly of Casey died Sunday. Funeral services for Margaret Brewer will be on Friday at 11 a.m. at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart. And 96-year-old Georgine Peters of Roanoke, Texas, and formerly of Harlan, died August 16th. Memorial services for Georgine Peters will be Saturday at 11 a.m. at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Harlan, with the Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan in charge of the arrangements. That is a check of the latest news here on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.